Welcome everyone to the Apocalary Podcast. We're back. Larry can actually see me live, which is actually not a benefit to this podcast whatsoever. But folks, we are so glad to be back with you. And so I'm Steve, by the way, and he's
Larry.
We'll take it. Yeah, we'll take it. Whatever.
I'm Dr. Lawrence Van Beek.
Dang right, you're Dr. Lawrence Van Beek. You worked for that advanced degree, young man. I, on the other hand, got mine gifted to me through... Oh, no, never mind. You don't need to know my story. But good to be with you, my friend. And tonight we're going to talk about prophecy and the prophets, right?
Yeah, I thought we'd do it just a little bit on that. Since Revelation calls itself a prophecy, we don't talk a lot about the prophets, and I thought we might.
Okay. Well, that sounds like something fun to do.
Yeah.
Now, you and I were talking... earlier today, because believe it or not, folks, we actually do talk to each other off camera. I know it seems like we're novices at this thing, but no, we actually do talk off camera. And I was talking today about, in my denomination, Evangelical Free, for the most part, we think the gift of prophecy is rather dead in the church. And Larry made the appropriate joke of...
Oh. I said probably for you it is.
That's right. Which I love that joke, by the way. But Larry, I mean, take me through kind of wherever you want this to go, whether you want it to go in a contemporary sense or, you know, from the Revelation sense and then pull it forward to contemporary. Lead us on, my friend.
I was actually going to go backwards rather than forwards.
Well, let's go backwards then.
And just talk about the prophets in general. The day of prophecy began during the divided kingdom period.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So before the divided kingdom, of course, you have the United Kingdom, you know, because there will always be a Britain.
Wales, Scotland.
Yeah. But they also had a United Kingdom in David's time. You know, which probably had just as many problems as the current United Kingdom has. David was the first king, and then of course his son Solomon was that. Saul was the first king, and then David, and then Solomon, and then the kingdom divides under a guy named Rehoboam.
Right.
Now there are prophets during David's time, right? And like Nahum and others that remember when David did his thing with Bathsheba, the prophets came and talked to him.
Right.
And then the really big time of the prophets seemed to, where you see most of them and you hear most of them, happened during the divided kingdom. So after David, Rehoboam takes over the two tribes, right? Judah and Benjamin. Mm-hmm. Jeroboam takes over 10 tribes. And then he changes the whole priesthood and everything.
Right.
And, you know, moves his centers to Dan and Bethel. And he was the guy who was called the man who caused Israel to sin.
Right, right.
And it was during this period that you start reading so much about the prophets. This is where you have most of your writing prophets happen during this period of time, during the period of the divided kingdom. Hmm. And so usually if you're reading about the prophets, so our four major prophets in the Protestant Bible are Isaiah, Ezekiel, Jeremiah, and Daniel. Right. Mm-hmm. And in the Hebrew Bible, Daniel isn't one of the prophets. He's one of the writings. He falls in the writings, not the prophets.
Okay.
And then the 12 minor prophets from the Protestant Bible are just one book in the Hebrew Bible. They're found in one scroll.
Okay.
Right. And so that's why their Bible has either 22 or 24 books. And our Old Testament has, 39 books. Right. So, but this is the time, this divided kingdom is the time of the prophets. So whenever you're reading, like if you're reading Isaiah or Jeremiah or one of the minor prophets, Amos or something, usually if you have a Bible chart with you and the Bible chart, and you can get them online. I bought a really good one once and I don't know what I did with it, but you can get them online and they will tell you who the kings of Judah, southern kingdom, or of Israel, the northern kingdom, who the kings are, and the prophets that were prophesying during that period of time. So that way you can put kings together with the prophets and kind of figure out the whole timeline of the
thing. Right, right, right.
But this is the time of the prophets. Now, there was prophecy all the way through, right? The judges prophesied. During Moses' time, there was prophecy, right? Yeah. Moses himself prophesied.
Well, I was going to say that. Like, I mean, wasn't that attributed to Moses at one point, too?
Oh, yes, it certainly was. Moses was prophesied of stuff as well, right? And of course, if you're an evangelical Christian, you tend to think that Moses wrote those first five books, right?
Right. Except his own death, right?
Except that little piece of his own death, yeah. and if you're a scholarly evangelical Christian, you know, you'll throw all of that out the window anyway. But
wow.
And then never speak of it again. Unless you're with Craig Evans, and then it's a little safer.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the prophets are during this divided kingdom time, and they're speaking specifically to the kings, right? And prophecy does two things, and if you've ever taken a course on the prophets, you'll always hear these terms, forthtelling and foretelling.
Okay. Right?
So the main purpose of the prophet was just to speak for God and do very much what a modern sermon does. You know, these are the things that God says, and this is why you're doing wrong, and you better get your life straightened out. You know, just, you know, the usual guilt stuff that you get in a good Pentecostal church or a Catholic church or any of that.
Yeah. So that would be forthtelling. Is that what that would be then?
That would be called forthtelling.
Okay.
And that actually fulfills most of what prophecy does. But there is the other little piece is the foretelling, the telling of the future. And all of these guys during the divided kingdom, talking to the kings, they would tell them how they should live, and every once in a while they tell them stuff that was going to happen. Which is why on a prophet like Isaiah, you know, some people say that Isaiah wrote the whole book, or his secretary wrote it, and others say that there are two Isaiahs. They call it the Deutero-Isaiah theory. So 1 to 40 is Isaiah, was written by Isaiah, and 40 on was written. And then there's Trito-Isaiah, which say there were three Isaiahs. But usually what they do is they say, Isaiah was so clear about things that happened in his own future that there's no way he could have written that. Somebody else must have wrote that. Mm. And they'll do that. So part of it says that I don't believe in prophecy, so therefore the prophets were actually talking about stuff in their own time, as if it was written by somebody earlier, right? And the other thing is that the language of the first 39 chapters are very different than the language of the last 27, which some people love, because that makes up the 66 books of our Bible, and they go, you know, it's Old Testament Isaiah, New Testament Isaiah, and actually in the New Testament Isaiah are many prophecies about Jesus,
right.
And of course, the big prophecy about Jesus, and this is the part of prophecy that we kind of wanted to talk a little bit about, was that if you go to Isaiah chapter 7, he talks about he's with Ahaz, remember, and Israel, Ahaz is from Judah, southern kingdom, and Israel, northern kingdom, and Syria are going to attack him, and they're terrified, right? You know. And Syria, that's Damascus, by the way. That city of Damascus we're having trouble with now.
Yeah, same thing.
They had trouble with then, yeah. They just didn't have the gas. Yeah. Sarin gas, is it Sarin? Yeah.
Or
Sarin gas, yeah. Thank you. And so they're about to attack Ahaz, and Isaiah says to Ahaz, listen, ask of God anything you want, and any sign that you want, and he'll give it to you. And Ahaz says, I will not test the Lord my God, right? Which is weird, because it's the same thing Jesus says to Satan, right?
Right.
However, when Jesus says it, it's okay.
Ahaz says it.
When Ahaz says it, it's totally out of a lack of faith, right? and of course, you remember what Isaiah says to him, don't you?
Right.
Isaiah says, well, listen, if you won't ask for a sign, God's going to give you a sign. A virgin's going to bear a child. A young maiden is going to bear a child, and that will be the sign to you. And of course, you know, we call that a prophecy of Emmanuel, the prophecy of the coming of Jesus, right?
Right.
and Jesus was born of a virgin by our theology.
Right.
And some people fuss, right? They say, oh, in the RSV version, they say a young maiden,
yeah,
rather than a virgin, right? But I always do like to point out that to the Jewish people, a young maiden was a virgin.
Oh, there's no contradiction there.
Well, not for them anyway, right?
Yeah.
Although they did mock Jesus afterwards because of his mom. But improperly mocked Jesus because of his mom. We should throw that piece.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so he says to Ahaz, you know, I'm going to give you a sign. And 700 years later, he gives him a sign. And some of the scholars will say, there must have been a young maiden at that time that had a child, or a young woman that Isaiah could have pointed to, because there's no way that you can have the prophecy 700 years later. But that's the thing that ties into Revelation and ties back to any of these prophets, is that they said this type of stuff. Now, this is sort of a Larry thing, which means that it's correct. No.
Holy word.
No. Yeah, that's. I knew you were on page.
Other people can say stuff, but they'd be wrong.
They'd be wrong. My daughter was going to get me a cup that said, "I was going to agree with you, but then we would both be wrong."
Not bad. I like that one.
Yeah, I like. It suited me. So anyway, to me though, there's a little piece about death that's so important, is that he says to Ahaz, "You're going to see the fulfillment of this," and I sort of believe that Ahaz, from wherever he was at the time, did see the fulfillment. Because, of course, life is not the end.
Right.
In God's economy, life is not the end. Do you remember Gandalf talking to Pippin on the wall of the White City? And Pippin says, "I can't believe it's going to end this way." And he goes, "Oh, Pippin, death is not the end."
Yeah.
And I think it's that way for us. The other piece of this... Am I talking? You want to jump in here?
No. I'm completely fine. I mean, I'll pull us back in a second to something that Greg Burrell said in my presence, at least, anyway.
You want to do that now? Or?
Well, no. I mean, I think you've talked through it, because what Craig argued for is that there was dual fulfillment of this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the guys do teach dual fulfillment. And so then that Isaiah piece would have been, there's somebody there, and then it also pointed to Jesus later.
Yeah.
Now, the dual fulfillment doesn't let go of the integrity of prophecy, or the integrity of them seeing the future, right?
Right.
Because it just says there's two fulfillments. And they'll do that a lot with Revelation when they talk about a preterist futurist view.
Yeah.
They can say John was looking at the Roman emperor, but overall he was looking at this coming Antichrist, this coming beast, right?
Yeah.
But I was going to say something else about this. One of the things that throws me off just a little bit is that Isaiah. Now, this is they talk about these different prophets, and you're not sure of all of it. But Isaiah, the son of Manasseh, Hezekiah's son, he killed Isaiah with a wooden saw.
Mm.
And if you look at it, Amos, they say the priest of Bethel tortured him and slew him. Obadiah endured many evil things, but he was okay at the end. Now, Elijah and Elisha, I think both Elijah and Elisha had rough times in their lives.
Right.
But they died okay, right?
Yeah.
And then just a couple of other ones. Nahum, they sought to kill Nahum. Habakkuk had said that the Jews stoned him in Jerusalem. And the Jews stoned, the Jewish people stoned Jeremiah as well.
Mm-hmm.
Ezekiel, it said the chief of the Jewish people in the land of the Chaldeans slew him. Daniel lived a long life, but he had his day in the lion's den, right? Became a big problem for the guys that got him to go into the lion's den. And Ahijah, it says... Now, he was the one that a lion slew him, and that's that weird story where he prophesies, and God says, go home and don't do anything else, and this other prophet says, well, come have supper with me, and he goes and has supper, and then he's going home, and a lion kills him, and the other prophet is actually quite upset about that. And then Zechariah, it says that Joash the king slew Zechariah and then sprinkled his blood on the horns of the altar.
So
now some of them died peacefully. Some of the prophets lived and died peacefully. Yeah. But so many of them were killed by the very people God sent them to talk to.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring this up is because it has to do something with us that actually fits the book of Revelation as well. It has to make us want to understand. I'm sorry for the big pause there.
No worries.
Like the bear in the bar with the deer. Why the big pause? Oh, that's such a stupid joke.
It's a pretty good dad joke, though. Come on.
Yeah. It works. But anyway, if God can allow his prophets to be killed this way, then death cannot mean to God what it means to us.
Oh, I love what you did there. Because it comes back around to the death motif, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry that I keep coming back to this.
No, it makes sense. Makes sense what you did there.
Yeah. And so for these people, like nobody serves God like the prophets, right?
Right.
The kings don't serve God like that. You know, they're living in a kingly life and having to deal with political issues and all that.
Right.
But the prophets are hearing directly from God and telling the people what God wants, and the people are killing them.
Yeah.
And God's allowing it. That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Is that God allows it. And for me, that is very difficult, right? It's just like when John starts talking about the punishments coming in the future. And then a couple of times he says, "And God, you are just." And it's like he's saying, "I don't know what else to do with this. All I can say is God, you're okay. If you're okay with this, it must be okay."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, forgive me, because I don't have the quote near right whatsoever in my mind, but it isn't that Jesus looking out over the city of Jerusalem saying, you know, the prophets I have sent you, essentially the prophets I have sent you, and you killed them all.
Yeah.
Before he goes too, that's where I was going to go with that. Yeah.
Well, that's right. And it's crazy to us because it doesn't work for us.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for us because and there's other places in scripture, you know, like we've talked before, right? 1,000 will fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come nigh unto you. I will protect you. You know, if you serve me, all of these blessings will be poured out upon you. And then you see these people that are following the closest to Jesus, or to God in this case, not Jesus. The people that are following the closest to God and hearing from him are suffering these things. Mm-hmm. But then we got to say, but I do believe in eternity.
Right.
And I do believe that there are levels of gifts that you get for eternity. I believe that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
And I still want to prove that you can go to Club Med and not be materialistic.
I've been tested with a little money. How about testing me with a whole lot of money?
I want to be tested with just a big bag of money.
Yeah. See what you did there.
Yeah. And I'll totally fail, right?
But but prove it to me. Prove it to me that it's wrong.
Give me one shot at this, right?
Yeah.
But that is the life of the prophet. And when you look at it, it was the life of the disciples very much too.
Mm-hmm.
Like several of the disciples died. You know, James was killed by the sword, and the disciples and the followers of Jesus were killed there too. And somebody's got to be able to say, how can a loving God allow that?
Right.
And you have to say, there's more to this picture,
right,
than what you're seeing. Now, our job is to protect people, look after people, and you know, make the world better and all that. That's part of our job. You know, look after widows and orphans. That's part of the job.
Right.
But if God chooses this, and he did to the people of Revelation, and he did to the prophets. And so that's why I thought if we spent a little bit of time with these guys and just saw where they were at.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Yeah. No, and I like how you brought that back, because I was trying to think, you know, the parallels to that the only thing I could see was the death motif, right? And it really is, it's the same message that God is saying from Old Testament to New Testament. You know, you will suffer for my faith. Yet you could easily read the Old Testament and think, why is this crap happening to me? God, just kill them all and get them out of my life. And it would all be good.
Yes. And at times he does that.
Yeah.
At times, you know, the enemy's coming and God wipes them out and they get stuck in the mud and they get confused and kill each other.
Yeah.
They do all kinds of stuff, right?
Right.
But these ones that follow him, like Elijah, one day he's with the 450 prophets of Baal. Was it 450?
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's mocking them. And they can't, they're cutting themselves, they can't get the thing lit. And he's saying, here's my altar, pour water on it. And then the fire comes down from heaven, just licks that whole thing up, you know. And very shortly after that, he's hiding in a cave being fed by ravens, terrified for his life, right?
Yeah.
And I you know, I love the ravens up here. They're gorgeous birds. I do not want to be fed by them. unless they're grabbing, you know, cellophane-wrapped steak.
bag sandwiches is what we're hoping for.
Like coolers full of stuff, you know, that they can just barely carry in their little claws.
Yeah, between two of them. Yeah, I like that. I know what you mean. Like, you know, they experience these high, you know, Elijah especially experiences these high points of his life, and yet within what seems a matter of moments, is ready to, Lord, just take me from this earth. I'm done. I'm the only one left.
I'm the only one serving you. And then God says, I've got 7,000.
Yeah.
And God never panders to these guys at all, right? No. I'm the only one. No, actually, I've got 7,000.
Yeah. and even as he takes Jonah on too, right? You know.
Yeah.
Same thing.
And Jonah's funny because people say he's so sucky, right? Because, you know, he goes and prophesies and they all repent. He goes, oh, God, that's why I didn't want to say anything, because I knew you were going to, you're so gracious. I knew you were going to do something like this. Right? But don't forget the terror that the Ninevite, the people of Nineveh, because that's the capital of Assyria.
Yeah.
And the Assyrians came in and they took over Israel. And you know, those were terrifying moments for them.
Right.
A lot of people died. They killed a lot of people. They remember, put hooks in their mouths and took them off.
Right.
So, yeah. I don't even want to be good to people that annoy me.
Yeah. There's fans of sports teams that are like, no, just let them all die. It's fine. You know?
Oh, great, yeah. Like someone was mocking the Leafs online, and I was able to say, hey, listen, if it weren't for the Leafs, everybody else would just look a little worse.
Yeah, that's right. At least you're not But a great point, Lair, that God is called through the prophets. He called to his people and they killed him. And yet we expect somehow that culture will bend to our will. Like here we stand today. And I think this to me is I'm sorry that I'm gonna call out our American brothers, but it's most stark to me in an American context, they honestly believe that they can Christianize that culture and yet don't expect to suffer for it.
Yeah, it is intriguing. My friend from the States, he says that American evangelicalism is it's political. It's intellectual and political. And in Canada, it's not quite that way, but it is very much there.
So, yeah,
and I don't know how right and wrong it is. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it weirds me out a bit that we, and I mean I have this too. I don't want to suffer. Don't get me wrong, but I think I'm weirded out by just the complete rejection of that we should even accept that suffering. I think maybe kind of weirds me out more than anything else.
Well, remember I saw a thing once. It was one of the old evangelists And he was talking about not having immigration because his concern was that the immigrants were coming and, you know, they were Buddhists and others. And he said, it's going to affect us and water down this Christian nation. And I thought, you know, the funny thing is you're right on everything except the point where you say don't let them in, because our job is not to not let them in. Our job is to win them to Christ. our job is to bring people to Christ.
Yeah.
In which case we want everybody around.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But personally, I don't want those changes to happen around me.
Right.
I really like the good life that we live.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
Shall we call that quits for today? Does that sound good?
I think that sounds pretty good. You know what? The audience isn't telling us anything because we can't even hear them right now.
No. They're screaming and crying.
Yeah. Like they probably stopped listening 10 minutes ago. Yeah, but whatever. No, I'm just joking, folks. Thank you so much that you joined Larry and I on this journey. I hope you found that enjoyable. I mean, I personally enjoyed Larry's discussion of that, and especially because that aha moment that comes along and you go, right, John's picking up that same theme in Revelation to say, you know, we will suffer for our faith. They suffered for their faith. They suffered for doing what was good. And hence, we are called to that same thing. That same thing is coming towards us too. So we hope you found that helpful. As always, we'd love to hear from you if you want to jot us a note. And we'll be back in a week or two's time. Who knows? Sometimes because of our schedules, we have to kind of delay this and do different things. But we sure appreciate you coming along. For now, it's bye from me. And it's bye from...
Dr. Vanby.
We'll see you next time on the Apocalary Podcast.